Hello, universe. Welcome back to Blacker Couch Reviews. I'm your host, Christina. We're back to discuss The Ones Who Live, episode 3, entitled Bye, directed by Michael Slavis, written by Gabriel Lalanis and Matthew Negrete. Another great episode. This show, it's so good. A lot of people are saying The Walking Dead is back. I say we finally got the conclusion to the story I was most interested in from its inception. And this epic love story that they are portraying while utilizing themes and characterizations from the past is just so well intricately, that's the word I'm looking for, woven together. And it's just becoming a masterpiece of storytelling and acting all around. This doesn't feel like The Walking Dead. This feels like a better version of The Last of Us. I know some people really like that show. I think it's a good show, but I'm not emotionally invested as much as I am in My Rishon. Additionally, I think the focus on very real and frightening actions that are actually happening today in this world, and depending on your intimate knowledge of communist or militaristic regimes, such as North Korea, Russia, Turkmenistan, there's a lot of places where, unfortunately, the government has a lot more say over what's actually happening, and the populace is not quite as free or informed as other democratic countries. Knowing that and seeing reactions is pretty enlightening, informing in regards to our own knowledge about how these types of governments work, how they're able to keep millions and billions of people under one ideology. It's curious how much the CRM feels like just another quote-unquote Negan to some, and not the very, very deeply seated evil that it truly is beginning to reestablish the world order into. And that's not just a threat to Rick. That's not just a threat to Michonne. That's not just a threat to Alexandria. That is a threat to many innocent people. And I think there is a slight disconnect of understanding where Michonne and Rick is coming from, because there's some that think that Rick is down this altruistic path and Michonne just wants to take him away from that path, understandably. But he could be, quote unquote, saving the world. And I think that that is an illusion that is bought into what Okafor was selling. I love Okafor as a character. I do believe that he wanted to do things to change the CRM. However, there's nothing to say that even Okafor admitted in his last words is that there's not really a plan to the plan. It's just an idea of we need people who might hold on to their souls and be able to lead others to the light because we're on a very dark path right now. That's pretty much where, and even myself, I thought that Rick had a plan going into moving up the ranks in the CRM. No, that he simply is assimilating, and that's where Michonne is having a huge problem. Yes, she wants to leave this place. Of course, she wants to go home and see her children. But in her mind, fighting the MCRM is not a debate. That's something she thinks that they should be doing, or at least coming up with a plan to eventually. Because like I said, even Rick saying right now, I'll just be here and keep you guys protected, while that's understandable on a personal level, in a sense, Michonne's even more right that no, we can't just be a part of this, because to be a part of it is to be complicit. And once you're in a mindset of a slippery road where you're being brainwashed, it's very easy to turn what you think is doing the better or the lesser of two evils and forget that you're doing evil or that evil is being done. And I think that that's a few tidbits that is arguing in the fandom right now about why Michonne isn't playing along and why Rick is very stubbornly, well, I think Rick is more understandable than Michonne's reasoning for people, at least from my observations, because we've seen Rick here before plenty of times. This man needs his family. There is no life for him unless he has the people around him that's being the angel and the devil on his shoulder in the best of ways. Knowing when to, okay, maybe take that Ricktatorship down. Let's put this Ricktatorship back into play. And Michonne has been there for both of those experiences. So to me, Rick and the audience being told at this episode about all of the blackmail that he feels, his mind is only in tunnel vision, which is security, protection. Those are the things that many people will sign away their rights to have. And that is essentially what he is doing, once again, for very understandable reasons. But Michonne isn't about to play that game, because to her, joining is assimilating. Assimilating makes you complicit. Rick said, the ones in red, they go out, they do things. I didn't know, but I knew. So if you knew, and only thing that moving up in the ranks is going to do is make you even more aware, and you continue to stay, that's a choice. Whether that choice is to 10 years down the line, do something about it, it's a hard thing that I know I would have a hard time. Just think about it like this. And I swear after this, I am going to get into the recap of the meat of the episode. But this is a true story. You are a part of the Nazi party. You're unaware of what they've been doing. You are promoted to general. You are now in charge of this particular work site with Jewish laborers. You have the Nazi regime wanting to come and take 50 to 60 people to take them to Auschwitz. You're aware what happens at Auschwitz. You, as a good person who didn't sign up for this, are trying to protect as many as you can. But you can't protect them all. You have to sign off on the paperwork to send a certain amount of Jewish citizens to their death. And yes, you've saved many from that fate, but you've also condemned many to that fate. That's a hard life you have to live afterwards, knowing that and having that on your conscience. And that's something that Michonne is adamantly not allowing Rick to do. For this new format, I'm just going to break the episode down in chunks. I've watched it, you've watched it, hopefully. And we can just discuss the deeper meanings behind some of these scenes. So we start in a flashback where Jadis is getting some fries. This is sometime after he's been healed, after the military hospital has taken care of him, and he runs into Jadis, who goes through the rundown of what the CRM was, what her position was with the CRM, and Rick's declaration that he's going home. Now, Jadis points out her and her trash people group were working with the CRM to exchange people because, like Negan says, and Rick repeats this episode, people are a resource. Not only would they take the B's, but they would also take the A's to dispose of them, effectively making the trash people in Jadis a slaver. She was able to exchange Rick as what, maybe the last person she had to give, because we don't know how long this operation had gone on, so maybe she had to meet a quota. Which actually makes sense, because if it takes 6 years of working for the CRM before you granted citizenship, it would take her 6 years of exchanging people, I would think, for her to earn her own place there. She wants to move up in the ranks. She thinks that they can both start a life here, that he can start a life here. And she thinks she's owed for that. It's quite often she mentions, "I saved your life." Yes, I saved your life. The same thing that Thorne states, but you didn't save my life, you know, by actually allowing me to have the freedom of one and the one that I want to pursue and desire. He says he's going to go home. She says, "Follow your bliss," which leads us to the present. Well, somewhat to the present, because we find out that it was Rick that went to Thorne. And while she was upset over Okafor and was happy to see that he was fine, she wasn't too keen on bringing someone else on in the plan. And Rick has to really manipulate her in that moment, knowing that she has been seeking out this intimacy with Rick so that they can be on the same team, be partners in this new life that they're pursuing. And I don't mean romantically. It was highlighted in this particular scene as well. Notice she goes to his apartment every time we've seen her. I think it's a brilliant way to highlight the differences, despite her thinking that Rick is family and seeing him as family and probably wanting him to reciprocate that bond, that friendship, that partnership. Rick has remained hesitant, and it takes him in that moment to convince her, "Yeah, you brought me to come around and see things your way. And now that Okafor's done, we're doing this for him. We're living out his legacy." And that's able to convince her to put herself on the line, because there was no way Michonne could actually hide being an A, no matter how much she tries or doesn't. I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch. The chances of her being found out are still pretty high, so he makes sure that she is able to pass through the initial phase as a consignee, even though they do suspect that she is an A. Jadis, back to that conversation, makes it clear that should anything happen to her, she left a file among her assets, which will get back to CRM command, and they will know where to find them and kill them upon discovery. This was because Rick said in response to her question of, "Do you want to kill me?"
"I've been waiting for this shit all my motherfucking life."
I do want Rick to take out Jadis, because he made her a promise. And she said, "Well, if you're going to do it, we're going to do it face to face." And I think that that's something we can all look forward to. I do enjoy the actress's villainous arc. I think she's playing it to the T, because she's perfectly annoying and likes to try to get under Rick's skin, but she's not really playing. I think out of any character on this show that has the hots for Rick, I think that Jadis would be high up there and delusional enough to think that maybe, just maybe, he has something for me. It makes his clapback so much better later on. Additionally, Rick asks, because the acting's really good in this scene, like, why are you making my life so fucking miserable? Where two people out of 200,000, she doesn't belong here. Well, you brought her here. That was her choice. Wasn't really her choice, but that's not here nor there. He wants to know why now she's threatening him. And she says, "Well, by yourself, you couldn't do it. But you two together? You could do anything." And Rick's so out of it, he doesn't understand that if they're frightened by their combined power and Jadis is coming out the woodwork to threaten them because they're that, or she's that afraid of their deal coming into scrutiny, because they did have a deal. Basically, "I don't tell them about the little Negan war, about how you were a part of our group, this, that, and the other thing. I owed you. You saved my life. I'm not going to say shit about it. because that's protecting everybody we have at home. But right now, she is a believer. And because she's a believer, that means there can be no deal to be made, which has always been a back and forth between Rick and Jadis. And she makes it clear, this is the line I'm drawing at. So Rick is now in a conundrum because wifey over here, as the consignee, she knows that her husband has been going through a lot. She's unsure how this place was able to keep someone as strong and capable as Rick and reduce him to trauma and fear. And she fears that it may be for ambition and security. Is it possible? It has been 6 years, if not more so. But Michonne is no fool. She is talking to Shoto as Daito, which means long sword in Japanese. I love the whole samurai that Nat just took one look at her in that sword and was like, yeah, you're a fucking samurai warrior. Let me get you all geared up. I really miss that. Back to the episode, though. She is at the same very spot that Rick was, trying to get away and thinking that whatever kept him from making it back to them, they can't stop them. And she walks past him with that little smile on her face. And Rick, he didn't know what to do.
You so fucking precious when you smile. Yeah. Hit it from the back and drive you wild.
Before this moment, Michonne had spoken to another consignee named Cleo, who can tell she knows her shit because it radiates off of her. I do like this allegory of a black woman being told to hide who they are, lest they be considered a problem. Because I can't tell you how many times I've been told to not be myself because that was better for A, B, C, D, E, F, G reasons. Michonne at no point agreed to Rick's plan. I like to point this out. Like, she's like, okay, I'm gonna do what we need to do so we can get out of here, because he promised that they would escape together. He assured her they would escape together, even though she did not want to go into the CRM because she is fully aware of what these people are. There is no reasoning with her on the reasons of why he feels he needs to stay. I did see a lot of slack being given to Michonne, like, oh, you're not playing the game very well. But like I said, being told not to be who you are, and I didn't sign up for that shit, get the fuck out of here. I'm not Carol, right? I'm not going to sit in play that game, because that's just not who I am. I think that she tried as much as she could, but once someone was in trouble and she needed to step up, it's ingrained within her. Think about the people that Rick and Michonne were before the apocalypse. She fought for justice as a lawyer. He was a cop that protected other people, including his family, but the entirety of a community. So they're both authentically and organically selfless people who take it upon themselves to take action. What have we learned thus far about this community? There's something that was said that honestly had the hair on the back of my neck raising and told me everything I needed to know about the CRM, is when Jadis brought up that they have a 500-year plan to remake the world and even make it better than it was before. And alarm bells went off in my head. If you are not a history connoisseur like myself, you would not have known that that was a very clear reference to the Third Reich.
These niggas crazy as fuck.
They also have different types of orientations based on the person that you are. If you're someone who is more of an asset or could be an asset, you get 3 days. The other bees or less, you know, noticeable individuals get 6 days. Michonne definitely had an accelerated orientation. Rick has decided, I can't go with her. I know I can't leave with her because of what Jadis has said. So I'm going to trick her into believing that we're getting away together, when in fact, I'm clearing out this entire pathway to get you away. Something Michonne is very hurt, disappointed, and confused by, even though at first she was elated to get that note slipped to her. And hey, they're together now, so they're about to be the force. They're about to get the fuck out of there, and they're about to come up with a plan. So she's all about this until she gets to the riverbank, and there's no Rick and a note saying that he loves her forever, but that she has to go back on her own and he has to stay without an explanation. And that's a big part of Michonne's journey, is figuring out what's what. What's going on here? Who are the players? I think she, at first, she thought she was going to be able to do that with Rick informing her, but it's clear he has no intention on bringing her in on whatever this organization is going to do, because she's going to tell him this is what we need to do, and he is not ready for it. He's just not. And it's understandable. He's had nothing but 6 years, as I pointed out last episode, of indoctrination. And every person he's turned to that is a good person somewhere in their core, but have been converted to B status, at least I can say that for Thorn, because letter grades do change in this universe, as we've seen, that he still feels stuck. He has the directions, like in the first episode, where he's lost. He needs to know where he's going, but he does have the tools he needs in the position that he's in to take some pretty damaging action. Something that's brought up a little bit later when he talks to Thorn after her promotion. We get the funeral of Okafor. Before, because I already talked about that part. There's not much to discuss other than she gets her sword back. That music coming on when she got her sword back was lovely. The idea, like, I left a little something for you. Not flowers, not chocolate, not jewelry, your sword. And she gets away, and she's so happy at that moment to be taken so far down. I can't never be distracted by Andy in that black. I mean, Didn't I pick out that outfit? Because every time he shows up, I'm just sexually assaulted, and it's not fair. Baby. At the funeral for Okafor, they do mention that our enemies could be our salvation. And they bring up General Mercer, who I believe... Oh man, I'm pulling my brain here. I think he tried to restore the monarchy, right? Bonnie Prince Charlie, is that the right prince I'm thinking of? And then he joined democracy in the United States and fought for during the Revolutionary War, I want to say. But he died fighting in battle, and it was a pretty impossible battle as well. His troops were running, but he decided to die in the face of the impossible, or an impossibility. And I think that that is something that is relevant, because I think the idea that the CRM is so huge makes many feel, well, I can't fight them. We can't fight them. We can't outdo. We're helpless in the face of everything that they're saying. But we've been here before. When we went up against the governor, we were undergunned. We had to go out and find what we needed. We had to make decisions. And those decisions weren't ever not to fight back, even when you try not to fight back. And you offered the peaceful route, but there is no negotiating with the CRM. These people kill anyone that come close to them in a really horrific manner. That's why, while I love and miss Okafor, there's a lot that he's done that can't be justified. So I don't know what's going on with General Beale. I feel as if he is the bad guy, of course, because he's the head of this military operation. But they did make it clear in this episode that there are more than one person that's in charge. This is not a dictatorship. There is a group of people and decision makers and their forces, I'm sure each loyal to them, that are a part of the CRM. It is large. And now I'm starting to understand the grand scope of trying to infiltrate something like this versus maybe we need to assimilate the rest of the world and fight against this, because this is going to be a problem. Whether you kick it down the line or not, this is going to be a problem if you value freedom, if you value other people not needing to die for you to be secure. And I don't think most people would be happy with that. I'm glad they mentioned that the army isn't allowed to set foot into the community. So that's something. Even though they could still have spies there, I do think that there is a separation of state and government, or I should say government and military. But the military is handling things right now that the state is fully unaware of. After the ceremony, he takes them, Major Beale, both aside and said that Okafor had a lot of faith in you. Don't think that I did. Especially you, Grimes, because when I think of your name, I think of Pharmacon, the poison or the cure. But then he does something interesting, which is hand him a book. And the last person we saw handing out books to try to teach is Okafor, when trying to incorporate both of these two into the army for what he said is his own purposes. But maybe, just maybe, I'm not really buying into this, but I'm going to throw it out there. Major Beale may be playing 3D chess. Maybe Okafor wasn't really alone, because I can't see the benefit of Beale other than saying, hey, you would have to be the one to take out their entire family, whatever, if they don't stack up. But this is a lot of years in the investment of two people versus the many others. So I'm curious what Okafor said to convince Beale to take so many chances on Rick that he still to this moment isn't convinced on, even though he is on Thorn, because he went to speak with her privately and she shows up and tells Rick that she's been promoted to commander. I love that he didn't congratulate her with a drink. She went and took a drink herself, very much like Jadis. They seem to think they have authority in his life. I wouldn't say that they're allies, but they're not enemies yet. Like, I feel with Thorn would be where Rick is if Rick wasn't still having that fire of Michonne in his belly. Thorn started off in the exact same position he did, wanting to get back to someone that they love. Very much so, doing it several times, trying to take out Okafor in the process of doing so. And then she is told, like Rick, you both would save the world if you could. There's something about you that makes you really good people and leaders and people that will follow you. And yet we've watched her continuously devolve or become brainwashed into this organization based on her own feelings of fear and security and the idea that, hey, this is for something bigger and now we know what we're fighting and, you know, I see the bigger picture now. Seeing the bigger picture and agreeing with that bigger picture are two different things, and that's where they diverge. And while they are not enemies yet, they certainly are approaching that dynamic because of her continued indoctrination into the CRM. And it's unfortunate because she had just as much potential as Rick did to maintain parts of his soul. And while he's gone so very far down this path, he has maintained his soul enough to no longer not consider or question the idea that my freedom is not really free. She didn't see that as an issue when they were having a conversation the first time. However, her visit is twofold because out of 17,000 consignees, Mrs. Grimes is already on Bill's radar.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Of course, this was all before the escape attempt, but this is what led up to Rick being like, no, she's got to go. She's got to go now. But look how much determination and effort he put into making sure she got out. Now, if he could just put that effort into destroying this disease that's starting to sprout. Yeah, he's an executioner. He is the executioner and terminator of the plan. Michonne is the heart and soul of it. I think in the drive and the courage and the strength. She's all the emotional parts of it. They're very much two halves of a whole. The next morning, because he for some reason thought his wife was about to leave him after everything she's went through to get to where he is, he don't know that story. She don't know what he's going through. They both have a lot of stress in their life, or a lot of emotions in their life coming from different places. And even then, I'm like, you really thought that you was just gonna be like, bye. No hugs, no kisses, no explanation, just go home. You forgot who the fuck you married. Because there's Michonne. Not only is she back at the consignee spot, she is breaking his record of 68 walkers killed in one day. Because not only is she angry, because that look she gave him. But once again, it's outrage. It's, you need to explain yourself. And I do mean now. When he said, go to the left, and it was a demand, and she stopped for a second like, oh, who are you talking to? You forgot who the fuck you talk, so we can talk. She took that helmet off so quick and slammed it down, didn't even say a word. And then he started explaining because he knew he needed to immediately reconcile that look on her face. And he explains that he can't go back. The only way to do so is making sure someone's here. He explains Okafor. Then he drops the, if you loved me, you would have left. Michonne's expression to that ridiculous statement. And then her just walking away without no dialogue. That scene was perfect because it left Rick even more discombobulated because he's never been able to control Michonne. Michonne's going to do what she thinks is best. And if I love you, I'm going to be patient and figure out what the fuck has got a stranglehold on you so that I can remove that. And you should know better. So that goes into bringing her in on the situation, because she goes into town and she wonders, maybe this place sucked him in. Maybe he did move on past us. It's a reasonable thing to assess. And she runs into the guy that drew her picture and Judas on the phone, even tried to do Carl at one point. And this was just a wonderful scene because we all was wondering where Rick got these artiste skills and no one questioned it. But the idea that he went somewhere and there is a person there that can draw you your loved ones, your lost loved ones. And then Carl, he even tried to remember him, and hearing how determined Rick was to see her again, how confident he was, that gives her the hope she needs in that moment to believe a little bit longer that she's going to find her Rick, the man she knows, and not this shell of a person that he's become. After orientation, they're taken to Okafor's spot, which is where he bombed out the stadium that his wife died in, which is very significant and poignant in different ways now that I realize what that spot meant to him. And they try to give or at least Thorne gives Michonne the rundown. She's far more abrasive than Okafor. She's trying to lure her in. She even mentions, I'm not Okafor. I'm not going to give this person a whole bunch of chances. I am promoted now and where I want to be, and I don't want anyone fucking up my position. She doesn't want her security rocked by this other person. And she announces that Rick is her family, her only family, which is hilarious, talking to Michonne about someone that is not just metaphoric, well, is her family as well, but on a much deeper level. Like, yeah, you've been through shit, but we've been through shit. I got babies. He got babies. You don't know these things between us, but I appreciated her clarifying her relationship with Rick. Like, this is my family. You saved him, which is the only reason why I'm allowing you as an A to stay here. And now I'm going to bring you in on the fact that you are going to feel like there's things that are wrong here. You're going to want answers, and I'm the one that can give you those answers. So she has her join consignment. Once again, the Michonne looks are everything, and the subtext. Like, I don't know him, but he seemed helpless. Right now, he is exactly that.
Pray for me.
During this exchange, depending on her answer, we saw that Thorne was prepared to kill Michonne. She had her knife out. Rick could see it. He drew his weapon. He didn't want to knee-jerk reaction because he didn't want to give the game away. But that was a very intense scene. Because while she thinks he drew his sidearm, as he explained, to back her up, he was ready to execute her if she even tried to approach his actual family. So I love that dynamic in that scene so much. I love how Thorne becomes the thorn in Rick's side as she's given her first command, which is to clear out 200 delts from this area. If it fails, it's back to zero. She's already explained that all of the bigwigs, all of the decision makers are going to be in the Cascades for this one conference. And she does not want to be seen as a liability. And she doesn't want Michonne to reflect on her. So she has tasked Rick with, okay, if you're going to bring her along like I brought you along, then you're going to be responsible for her. And I am not going to be Okafor and giving you that many chances to put her in line. That's what causes Rick even more headache as their assignment begins to unfold in the Cascades. Thorne shows that she, despite being chosen as an A, has downgraded to a B. She's unable to take command of this force. She's unable to successfully lead what needs to be done, the mission, which is to get rid of these 200 delts. And because Michonne and Rick were able to accomplish that mission, she, while angry, couldn't take decisive action against them in the way she would want to. Although we saw she had her shame moment where she was about to take Michonne on out through the scope. There is jealousy there. Definitely. Once again, I don't think it's romantically inclined. This is a force of nature that I am not going to be able to control. And if I can't control it, like she feels she can control Rick, like Jadis feels like they gotten or have been able to control Rick, then this is a problem. I have to get rid of that problem because other people are going to follow her instead of me. And that's exactly where Shane was taking the Lori shit out of it when Rick showed up. Things I really liked about this chunk of scene unfolding, Michonne's looks, the way she's just standing there. She doesn't say yes, ma'am. She watches Rick the whole entire time with the side eye. Her side eye was real as hell. She's amused and bemused by what she sees. And she tries to, and I think she really did try to work with Thorne. Like, okay, who's this person? But she's not saying anything. And I love that because it takes me back to the governor days where she's like, I smell bullshit. And I'm about to figure out where this caca is coming from. And she sees the way in which Rick has fallen into the militaristic routine state of the developments that's been happening. And while she certainly would have helped Thorne didn't want her help because she doesn't want to share the burden of leadership. Whereas Michonne has had the burden of leadership on her shoulders for a very long time now. I like the big back and forth between them because without Rick, she turned into Rick. Like, we ain't opening our doors to nobody. It's about us. But she had to remind herself that Rick died for the idea of not shutting ourselves off, not helping people. And that's where Rick is at right now. He's very much about protecting his family. And she has to remind him that that's not what we fought for. That's not what Carl died for. But they have their epic scene where she's carrying that load all by herself because she's a badass boss. And then Rick joins her. Because in this moment, she's the A and he's the B. But together, they're able to take out all the walkers and accomplish an impossible feat of killing 200 delts. She tried to do it manually, which was not going to work out because she refused to depend on anyone else. These slow sacks of shit, no. So if you can't depend on your team or you don't have faith in your team, you're already a fucked up leader.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Then after they do what they do, because that's what they do, you have that very romantic moment where, yes, part of me was like, hold on, guys, there is no cover. The smoke ain't that thick. But I think the indications were there that they were further away from the main group and that the smoke was supposed to be covering them from possibly being seen. Because we had that whole moment of if you get lost in the amount of smoke there will be that you can click a button that's a tracker, which Rick clicked in the second episode, which I think some people missed, to help assist them. There'll be a troop deployed to come and get you. So they were clearly further away than they were indicating. And then they had their romantic moment where Rick's like, yeah, we are a movement together. And he probably feels some kind of way about how they left their last conversation.
Sorry.
He's a man dying of thirst every time he gets his lips on Michonne's. And she's like, come on, let's just go. But he recommits to the idea because he's never really left his mind. But he says, not like this. And then the moment happens where Thorne has her in his sights and that's another trigger for him. It's another nail in the coffin of you're going to lose who you love the most. And now he's paralyzed in that fear. And the one person he had as an ally, which was kind of an ally that he thought he can control, he's losing that control because she goes off when she gets back to the base and she tells him that you're moving up the ranks. You're about to get the echelon briefing. He goes back to Michonne. Well, first, Jadis approaches him and tells him that she is stationed here now, no more back and forth between Pittsburgh. She has her own apartment. Is that what they're going to find in the next episode? Not sure, but there is a mention because Michonne was like, there's nothing out here. So clearly they've made a city their base around this campus. And Rick's absolute disgust when she said, you should come back to my room. And she put her hands on him.
You know the rules, and so do I. Say goodbye.
One of my two favorite Rick Grimes moments dealing with Jada Kiss, because that's her street name. Because after he thinks that Michonne has gotten away, or he's made it look like she's gotten away, he wants her in charge of the investigation so that she can ensure that they think that Michonne is dead. She tries to pose to him in that moment that maybe there's something else that's making you want to stay here. And she thinks it's herself, saying, I did save your life. And he's like, yeah, now you get to save her life. You're a hero with a shit haircut. It's not just the burn itself, it's the way in which Rick's eyebrows raised right after the insult, as if to say, never in a million years will I touch your damaged cooch. What you do is for you, and if you want to delusion yourself and think that you're a good person, sure, I'll play along. But no, that I wouldn't touch you with a 10-foot pole and my life depended on it. I did like this scene where she says, she hasn't seen me yet. Oh, she seen me.
Oh, hell no.
Michonne once again wants to know what the hell is going on, but he yanks her aside and tells her, you're going back to base, because he promised Thorne that she wouldn't have to see her, because she's like, I don't want to see her anymore. You're going to take her back. Because he made a lot of excuses to try to keep her safe in that moment. Because she really wanted to take her out. And I don't think nothing Rick did or could do in his mind could save her from that, which is, you know, sad in itself. Because his woman is not easy to take out. We don't even know where she hid her sword. He doesn't want to answer her questions about Jadis, so he tells her, you're going to leave and go back to Judith if I have to knock you out and put you in that canoe myself. Everything we had is broken. It's over. This, of course, is another knife in Michonne's heart. The second dagger she's had to deal with in the last 24 hours. And she ain't even done grieving what was her family in that. Which leads to one of the best moments in TV history when they're both on the helicopter and there's a storm outside. It's so very poetic because there's a storm raging between them. There's a storm brewing inside Michonne. And she goes, she talks to her daughter. I shall tell, hold on. I'm sorry. We may not be back. Because she opened. Now, she was scoping out below. You saw that earlier too when she was in the helicopter, she was scoping out what was in the surrounding areas as Thorne once again was trying to tell her how lucky she is to be here. So she knew that there was a lake down below and she was looking at it prior to Rick. And I love that they were both just eye fucking each other with so much unsaid. And she just yeeted his ass out the helicopter. Like, you know what?
Man, you know what? I'm tired of you. I'm tired of this shit.
That was a prime example of, I am 100% done doing this your way. Either we walking out together or I'm dragging your ass out. You forgot who's the physical assaulter in this relationship, sir. Well, that's how we end the episode, with them just out in the helicopter. Now, this could be construed as an escape, but honestly, due to the circumstances and that helicopter being focused, or the pilot being focused on what he was focused on, it's easy to be like, oh, we fell out, or something happened. It was so, the turbulence was so bad that the door opened and she started to fall out and I went after her. There's plenty of story they can make up to make this not be an escape attempt. But I'm sure Michonne in her mind was like, okay, this is our escape attempt. We're not going back. But even if he feels he needs to go back, she needs to understand why he feels that way. And if it's, and what's going on. Like, why do you really feel this? And I think they need to have this conversation. I think this is when what's been going on with her life the last few years Let's not forget, Michonne had to wipe out a whole group of kindergartners just to protect their family. Rick hasn't given us the whole story of his first two escapes, what he may have had to go through if by the third time they're putting a chain on him just when he goes out. I think I've covered everything in the episode that was important in the episode. I do have some side notes. It's kind of fucked up. I didn't take any dissertation notes on this episode and still managed to be an hour long. I love that this episode set up the return of the Ricktatorship coming soon. Some are a little thrown off by Rick's plans, but I think his evolution has been consistent. It wasn't until biting the neck out of that guy that Rick embraced who exactly he was and what he was willing to do in order to protect his family. And it wasn't fear holding him back. He was everything that Michonne is right now. Like, I've been through too much for me to never not stand in my true potential. And that's where he died, metaphorically. And Michonne has to bring him back. And that has been a part of each other's story for a very long time. Everything that Michonne is doing right now is been part of her story for a very long time. I think she even had a line in a previous season where they're talking about my shit never stopped being right. And it's true. She lost herself and went through this Walking Dead journey years before she even met Rick Grimes. And from that moment, he has inspired a hope inside of her that she now continues to feel and pass on to him when that's necessary. But when the other needs to be a stone cold killer and go out and search for the enemy while the other is planting grass with Grandpa Herschel, well, then they'll exchange that role as well. With the governor, that's what I'm referring to. When she went out and that whole year was searching for his ass because someone had to pay. Someone's got to pay for that. That's where she's at right now. Rick is going to join her. I love that the next episode is going to be them finally having the breath it takes to have the deep conversations that they are going to need to have. They're not one-off conversations. They're conversations they're going to need time to feel the weight of. And that's what being a part of the CRM and continuing to be a part of the CRM has not allowed them to do. And that's why Michonne has not said anything about RJ. I think some people are trying to give her negative motives for holding back RJ, which is silly. Because of course she wants to celebrate the fact that they both have this son, but anyone who's ever had children should know that that is, even saying I'm pregnant is not a conversation you take on lightly. It needs to be the right time, the right place, the right moment for these very big life altering facts to be dropped on someone. So no, I don't think it's odd at all that Michonne has not brought up RJ, even though quite a few people seem to take umbrage at that fact or think that there's some, you know, she's not Lori. And I think that that's something that's always been clear to me. But I could see, I guess, why people, if they don't have the faith that I do, would be concerned about that particular type of emotional manipulation, which is rather fucked up because seriously, the whole episode, Michonne was looking at Rick with the same expression that I be looking at y'all.
You fucking crazy, man. You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medic.
And lastly, before we jump into feedback, isolation is a bitch. When you're isolated, it is very easy for other people to get louder and louder in your head And it becomes harder and harder to stick to your convictions. And it's beautifully done in this epic love story that just when he was, even after the year that he was given to accept his fate, just now decided to commit to that, to Okafor, when Michonne found him. Because he needed to be found in that moment. He's lost. And this episode, they touched on it just a bit with Rick walking around in a circle and saying why. But the sheer amount of weight of that, I can't wait to see Andrew Lincoln be able to allow that to fall, to allow Michonne to take on that, and to see just how strong he actually is to have resisted for as long as he has. That takes a certain amount of fortitude. And while it's understated, it is something that I see through this experience, which is why Michonne knows she needs to get him away from that isolation and back in the aura to allow him to heal, because he also needs to heal from what they've put him through, what he's put himself through. Once again, that idea of being trapped, I feel like it's just very easily glossed over. However, it comes with a severe amount of emotional damage and trauma. And that, like I said, that he still has any part of himself still left over from that highlights his strength of character. But it took a toll. I love what they did with Thorn. I love that they're showing that even the best of us could be corrupted, and that I still like her as a character, because all she is being swept up in the only thing that she can see has purpose in her life. And now that she's lost her mentor, she's lost whatever love she had prior, all she has left is this. Otherwise, it probably was the same suicidal thought she was having previously. So it's not without empathy. And I don't give a fuck if the CRM is working on a cure, is dealing with the variants that I heard are going around. These people have genocide on their mind. They've already taken out 1/3 of the population, have every intention on taking out the other, so that they are the last ones standing. There's nothing about this organization that, to me, is saving the world. And Rick is not saving the world with them. He is still one person against many, and he's going to need a team behind him. And I think that was also shown with Thorne's situation of not being able to have the people that you need at your back that you can rely on. If you want me to go back to just scene by scene next episode, I will put out a poll. Let me know. I don't mind. I just write a lot of notes. But as I said, if it's just going to come out to the same time marker, maybe that will be a little bit more organized. I did get a comment that says I yap too much. It's like, well, it is a podcast. But I take all feedback when it's done in an attempted respectful manner. So I'm trying to cut down on the rambling as I continue to ramble right now. But if you want to send feedback, blackercouch@gmail.com, because we're about to jump into some to hear what Mimi has to think about this episode. Or you can leave a comment below wherever you're listening to this podcast, Podbean, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Go down to the rating section, drop some stars, leave a review. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. It's feedback time. Time to jump into the mailbag.
Mail, motherfucker.
What up, Stina? It's Mimi. This is my feedback for The Ones Who Live, episode 3. I've been going back and forth. I don't know this app that I've been using decided it wanted to just change suddenly. So I'm having some technical difficulties. So hopefully this one works. It looks different. I can't even tell if it's working. But anyway, I don't really have much to say about this episode. I really liked it, don't get me wrong, but I feel like my thoughts have been kind of altered because I've been reading a lot of things people have been talking about on Twitter. I don't know how they all ended up on my feed. Probably because I, you know, tweeted about it once, and like now everybody on my feed is the ones who live. It used to be a lot of All-American Homecoming or All-American, and then it used to be a lot of West Allen, The Flash, you know, but now I tweeted that one thing, and now like my whole timeline, don't get me wrong, it's good entertainment. Some of these people are funny, and some of them be in the trenches fighting for their life. Actually, I mean, they not fighting for their life. They just dragging the hell out of people. I don't know why people go on Reddit. I really don't, because it's a cesspool. I've only ever read comments that other people screenshotted, and it's disgusting. I would never even put that in my website browser because I don't want nothing to do with that kind of cesspool. But anyway, one of the things I want to bring up is the actress that plays Pearl. She really be on here going in and talking with the, like, she really in here with the fans. Like, a lot of the things I read stemmed from, you know, a conversation people were having about Pearl being jealous of Dana, quote unquote Dana, because, you know, she's really an A and Pearl is really a B, parading around as an A. And I don't want to pretend like I understand television like that. I don't even think that hard about things. That's one of the reasons why I said that I don't want to go too deep in it. I think next time, like this Sunday when I watch it, I'm going to just send feedback first and then go, you know, read what people have to say about it on Twitter. And then like that some people like attach like YouTube things and I watch those. So I feel like my thoughts might not be my own right now. So I don't want to say, but I will say what they said, that Pearl is just jealous of Dana. And, you know, the fact that Rick was so ready to shoot her, but she called him family because his real family's there. And I just want to point out, this is one of the things I was talking about before, you know, the actress that plays Pearl went online and said anything about, you know, their platonic relationship, her and Rick, before we saw the episode 3 and she said that they're family. I was just saying that exactly what happened. Rick, in his mind, was like, I'm stuck here. There's nothing I can do about it. So I might as well make lemons out of lemonade. So he became friends with Pearl, as much of a friend that Rick can be. Because I do believe everyone gets to a point where life beats them down. Beats them down so much that they're not really themselves. And I think Rick is there. He gave up on the escape mentality. And I think that's kind of the part of being like, you know, you can only fight for so long. Either you fight and then you just die, like, I don't want to be here anymore. Or you fight and you live and you're like a mindless zombie. You just go with the flow. And I feel like that's where Rick is. I don't think he's ever going to be indoctrinated the way Pearl is, because that's just not the way Rick is set. Him and Michonne, if they don't agree with something, they will fight tooth and nail and tell death to continue on with their own personal beliefs. And I think that's what makes Rick an A, and Pearl is not necessarily an A, because she was indoctrinated. But I also feel like on the other side of it, it could be to the point where, like the actress saying, Pearl has nothing else to believe in. She knows she's never going to make it back to South Africa. She knows she's stuck here for however long her life is. And at this point, it's either beat them or join them. And I feel like I said, what the actress said made sense. It was like, you know, you're told this information. And yes, like she's indoctrinated into this. But she feels like, what else is there to fight for if there's not for this? She feels in her soul she's doing the right thing. Everything they told her, you know, what they're in for is like what they're doing helps. Because whatever dude said, they have a 500-year, what did she say, 500-year plan? That's a long time. But they plan on making the world whole again. And I think in her mind, like, if I can't be with my family, maybe my family's out there. Maybe my family's continuing. Maybe whoever I lost out there can continue on, you know, generation to generation, and I can help them in the future. Maybe that's what she's saying. And, you know, just in life, there's choices, like there's things that you do that you might not necessarily believe are the best situations or the best solutions. But I mean, if you can't think of anything better, you know, Michonne and Rick have better. Pearl doesn't. So to her, this is the best we're going to do. And this, I can fight for this. And the fact that she was in the military, even if it was another military outside the United States, I feel like the mindset of a military person is the same. You follow orders because you believe in something. And that's what she's doing. Rick, on the other hand, I feel like he's to the point where he's broken and he doesn't think that there's any other way to escape. Like in his mind, this is where I'm at. This is it. And at first I feel like he pulled Michonne in probably just in the mindset that my family's here and we can do this. We can escape. But then when Jadis came in and decided that she was going to just pull the rug right underneath him, he realized like this is going to get her killed. And then my daughter is going to be an orphan. Like I don't want that. If she can't have me, she should have her mother. And I think that's what Rick is doing. And the funny thing is that Rick like tricking her into getting on the boat. Like it makes sense because he knows that she's not going to leave without him. I feel like in his mind, maybe, I mean, it's been 6 years. At least I say it's 6 years. You say nine. I don't know where nine came from. I might have missed something somewhere, but it's been years. So maybe, maybe he forgot what kind of woman he has. Like, dude, you're not going to tell me what to do. And he really thought she got on that boat. I was like, I know she didn't. As soon as she realized he wasn't there, she was like, let me go back here. So she made her way all the way back there through the trenches, back through the, I don't know. It looked like an old train station. I don't know, back there, and went back to her room, put her katana away and decided she was just going to go back and be I feel like she was acting on instinct at the beginning, especially when she helped that one lady who the walker wasn't quite dead and almost got her. But now she's like, fuck it. They can know I'm an A. I don't care. Because she was going entirely too hard when she came back and Rick realized that she didn't leave. It's like, Michonne, now you're just being petty. Like, come on now. I love the scene when it was Rick, Pearl, and Michonne, and Pearl was trying to get her to admit that she knew Rick. And I feel like this is what I was saying. When you're around someone enough, whether it's a romantic relationship or not, let's just say y'all are friends, you tend to know when they're like either upset or something's off. And I sense that Pearl knows, and this is exactly what I was trying to say. Pearl knows that Rick is not being honest. She might not know that this is Michonne. I think she suspects it. That's just my own personal opinion. But I don't think she But I think she knows that Rick isn't being 100% honest with her. The fact that she, when she was pulling her knife and Rick had his gun out, she knew he had his gun out. She even called it out, like, why were you drawing your gun? And he was like, I will give Rick props for his quick lie, because he was on top of them lies on, like, turn, like, super fast. Like, you're not going to know that I got you. I'm clocking you and I'm about to shoot you because I can switch it on and off. And he was like, I was there. You had drawn your knife. I just wanted to have your back, you know, because, you know, we family. Like, I appreciate that entire scene. Really, I really loved it. It gave me everything I needed to know. The fact that she, like, I think that Rick was content with letting her think they were family. Maybe he never really felt that way. Maybe he did feel that way, but it was easily switched over when he realized Michonne was alive, and now he knows Judy's alive. Judith is alive. So I feel like because of that situation, he was like, you can never be my family. And now in his mindset, he's like, I got to get her out of here no matter what I need to do. And I'm gonna choose her safety over my own. And it's so funny that, like, the next scene with, like, when Michonne saw Jadis and she was looking at her, I was like, uh-oh, this interaction is gonna be like, and Rick dragged her away like, it doesn't matter. And he's like yelling at her. I've never in my soul, not even for a second, believed him. And it's like, that's one of the things, like, I feel like I shouldn't have read, because that's what got me in the rabbit hole of going through, like, the Twitter feeds. People were talking about, like, there's somebody out there on Reddit saying that Rick is has toxic masculinity. Rick is an abuser because of the way he talked to Michonne. Anybody that has watched The Walking Dead from the beginning, if you just started watching it now, you don't know Michonne. And you need to be quiet, because anybody that know, if Rick was a misogynistic, toxic man, he would have never even been attracted to Michonne. There's absolutely no way. Like, the way they look at each other, and Michonne know, like, let me take that episode when she, like, knocked him out because he was acting crazy. Like, he fell in love with her after she beat his ass. That you don't know them, so you should just mind your business. And I, like, reading that is what really, really got me. I was like, I cannot believe people watched that scene and didn't come to the conclusion. Like, he is acting that way because he wants her to leave. And I really believe he would knock her out and put her, he would try, I should say, knock her out and put her on that boat. But it is Michonne. He is not an abuser. Absolutely not. Because if he was, he'd have beat Lori's ass when he found her. Fucking his best friend. I'm just saying. I'm not condoning abuse, but an abuser would not have accepted that. He pretended like it never happened and just went, they went back to their lovely pretend relationship. And he even acted like Judith was his. And we found out later that he knows that Judith isn't his, but that's his daughter. You know, so you getting on Reddit spewing your nonsense, just say you don't like black women and move on, because that's the same crap that used to come up with Iris and Barry's relationship. If you're watching the same show, there is no way you can come to any kind of conclusion like that. Rick is the opposite of a toxic masculine man. He is the equal opportunity most kind of man I've ever met. Like if you could catch this work, whether you're a man or a woman, you could be on my side, whether you're a man, you could fight for me, whether you're a man, you could fight me, whether you're a man or a woman. Like, absolutely not. But that scene, it really, like, it had me, like, I was laughing. I know it wasn't supposed to be funny, but I was laughing. And then the next scene, like, because Michonne just looked at him. She didn't say anything. She didn't argue with him. And I was like, girl, what are you thinking? I need a thought bubble or something. And then we get that next scene when they're on the plane and it's like turbulence like crazy, and she opens or they're on a helicopter and she throws them both out of it. I was like, I know that's right. I personally, like, when I looked through the, like, storm, I saw it looked like what was the lighthouse. That's what I saw. But someone else on Twitter was saying, oh, this is lazy writing. What kind of stupid shit is that? You can't you're going to have her just throw herself out of a plane. She don't know where she at. Like, first of all, I could tell they were above water just from looking out the window. And I saw a lighthouse. And I'm assuming Michonne saw a lighthouse. And how do we know that she didn't see that lighthouse on the way there? We don't know. And we also don't know what she was thinking when she did it, which is probably, we're probably going to get in the next episode 4, which I hear is going to be a doozy. I know I'm already late with this, so I'm going to go ahead and end it here. But I just would like to point out that they said that this next episode is rated TV-MA, which is TV mature. I don't know if you know this, but Vikings is TV 14. And that shit be getting really gruesome and sexual. So I'm very curious to know what is about to happen in this episode. And I am super hyped. I'm sad that this is episode 4. We only getting 6. So we're more than halfway through. But this next episode, I think might be for us Rashoners. I think we're going to love it. And I think it's going to be great. So I, for one, I'm looking super forward to it. I am going to watch it, because I'm off that night, watch it again, and then send feedback, then get on Twitter, because I know my thoughts get muddled when I read what other people think. Anyway, I'll end it here. Until next time, love, peace, hair grease, a black girl magic, queen of the couch, Mimi, out.
Thank you, Mimi, for your thoughts on the episode. I actually, you probably won't notice this, but I have recorded on the day the episode drops, Monday morning is when I recorded this episode, even though I'm doing your feedback section on Wednesday. So I do tend to get my thoughts out before I go searching for any information, just so that I don't get caught up talking completely about what other people are talking about on the interwebs out there. Because I know, I have no doubt that there's fuckery around. And what you brought up, it's unfortunate. Rick is in a moment of, a lot of people are saying broken, yes, but I think it's also coming from a place of fear. That's not toxic male behavior. And I don't even think that's against black women as much as it's against a white male. There are two sides of that equation, and I've seen both sides of it. There are those who really don't like Michonne or black women, and there are those that Michonne is a queen and Rick Grimes he's not the king. He doesn't add up to that. So yeah, that comment about Rick being a toxic male feels more towards Rick and the white male populace than towards Michonne as a black woman. And I've seen the same thing, and we've seen the same thing happen with Wes Allen on that side of what, you know, that's why I don't go on Twitter. I hate to say it. I don't. And that's the algorithm, girl. Once you start searching for anything on the internet nowadays, the algorithm knows and will start directing traffic your way to get you to engage. That's why I mean by the internet is deceptive. And the more you're on it, the more they're trying to make you a slave to things that you yourself it'd be hard for you to resist clicking on or jumping into, you know, a rabbit hole around. They do the same thing on YouTube. So it's not just a Twitter thing or social media in general. I will say about the apps, I do hate when there's an upgrade and they change the app. You're like, what the fuck? What is this? And you have to figure out a whole new life based on this new app. Like, yeah, thanks. I'm glad that I, in my podcast, was discussing the letter. And that's what they kind of prefaced in Nat's episode. That just because someone sees you as an A doesn't mean you stay an A. You stay a B. You can't label people. That's the whole point. We fluctuate depending on the circumstances. And who you come in contact and who motivates you. So by definition, their own fucking system is definitely askewed. And lastly, they definitely fuck in the next episode. I heard from the Say Yes episode and the Grapevine that there were scenes that were so sexy that they could not be allowed in to the show. So now that you told me that, how am I supposed to deal with this? I can barely watch them kissing without covering my eyeballs or like going crazy. I barely got through that van scene. It took me like 8 episodes just to get through the whole scene because I felt like I was watching my parents have sex. Even though I will thoroughly enjoy it, and it's definitely going to be hot, and we certainly going to need plenty of towels and what else do you use? Oh, I'm just being funny, but seriously, it's going to be amazing. They're probably going to have very deep conversations. I hope they bring up RJ. They're definitely going to bring up RJ. And I think Rick is just going to get his groove back. This is something we needed to happen, and it's going to happen. And I already can't wait. I don't know how I'm going to be able to contain myself. I don't know how you're going to be able to contain yourself not being able to see it until the very next day. Whereas most of us Sunday night are all freaking out. Oh, and one last thing I did want to bring up was the regards to the CRM, because a lot of people are under this impression that the CRM is this impossible force to beat. And what are you talking about? Rick's not stupid not to go up against them. First and foremost, history has always taught us that just because the oppressor happens to be the bigger opponent or the more formidable opponent doesn't mean that the lesser force. I mean, look at the Macedonians. Look how fucking small that alien is with Alexander the Great, and see how much of the world he fucking conquered. It's not that hard to ascertain for me, loving history, that the CRM, yes, while certainly not going to be wiped out in one swift move, can be dealt a fatal flaw or a fatal blow, even if it doesn't happen this season. Even if all they're going to do is start what may be a civil war or the start of a cold war, which is two topics they brought up in the show thus far, one from Okafor, the other from General Beale. Because there's also this thing called the walkers that can be utilized as weapons in this world as well. And that's something I think they've shown us is Rick and Michonne's thing. Like, they even get hot and bothered just killing walkers together. So, yeah, the CRM, I know they got gas and all that stuff, but 10% out of their, like, they don't even control most of the military. They can't go into the city. Only the red shirts know what's going on. So that's 10% of an army. If the other 90% are like, you know what, we're not down with that gas. Yeah, I'm sure they can put up a fight and go break off and make a little, but yeah, everyone's just going to be fighting against them. All it takes is a little information about the genocidal activities going on. And I don't think most people are going to be down for what the CRM is doing. They already are at the moment of slight distrust. I think that Esteban's girlfriend being a journalist may be something, because if you can get information out about what they're doing as well, that can turn the tide of the Civic Republic to disconnect itself from the military. And yeah, I can see further in other series that's not this limited series that the world would then turn into fighting this other force for dominance over the new world order, so to speak. That's where we're going to leave it here. Next week, I will be implementing a new setup. I will only be doing a recap of the episode, like very quick recap of the episode, and then mainly discussing my thoughts. So if you have feedback to offer, blackercouch@gmail.com, you can leave a comment below. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. Until the next time. Peace, hair grease, and blacker magic.